and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you. We are going to be diving into so much different stuff. We're going to catch up on a lot of this insane news that's going on lately in cybersecurity and cyber warfare. We're going to take a deep dive into the 2018 midterm elections and all the cybersecurity considerations for that. I'm going to take audience questions. It's going to be a great time, so stick around. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in future internet use, and I'm probably actually going to do a deep dive on this one in an upcoming show because I just find this topic so fascinating. Recently, Eric Schmidt, and if you don't know who Eric Schmidt is, he is one of the founders of Google. Him and Sergey Brin are the ones that founded this. He basically was at a venture capitalist firm, like a reception, like a private meeting with them. But it was he was quoted from this. And basically, he says in 10 years, in 2028, there's basically going to be a China-led internet and there's going to be a United States-based internet. Now, the reason why he's saying this is that the Chinese government right now has this huge initiative to push into about 60 or so countries around the globe to become an economic powerhouse, kind of create what the United States has done in terms of global trade over the last, 50, 60, 70 years. China is in the process of doing this. And so basically, Eric Schmidt says, well, this is globalization. China gets to play too. And what we're going to see is a Chinese-based internet that is based on censorship. It's based on authoritarianism and all of this, but it's going to be infrastructure that's pushed out to 60 countries or so, or however many countries sign up for their for this project initiative that they're doing. And we're going to see the American-based internet that's led by America and Western Europe that is going to be more free and it's more open. So basically, Google accepts this. And the reason why Google accepts this, and Google has actually been working on helping the Chinese government achieve this by doing something called Project Dragonfly. Now, I've mentioned Project Dragonfly on the air and definitely in my daily videos, but what makes Project Dragonfly very interesting, and I'll recap this real quick, is that it is a brand new search engine that is being developed for the Chinese government that allows the Chinese government not just to severely censor data that they don't want their citizens to see, but also gives them the ability to track. You have to log in to use Dragonfly. It links to your number, like your phone number. And on top of all of this, Project Dragonfly basically is a way for the Chinese government to continue their social reputation scoring. Now, what they've been doing is ranking all of their citizens on social reputation scores based on social media posts. So if they find out that, let's say, you've purchased too many video games, that is actually demerits. If you are talking bad about the Chinese government, that's demerits. If you are looking for things like, free Tibet, those are demerits. And what a demerit basically means is that if you get enough of these things, they will start withholding services from you. So you get enough demerits, you can't use public transportation. You can't use public transportation. How on earth are you going to get to work? This is what we're seeing coming out of China. And this is what Google is anticipating that China is going to be doing. If they are the economic powerhouse leading another 60 plus countries, in, let's say, economic stability in the future, these countries are going to be sacrificing a little bit of their freedom for China's censorship and authoritarianism versus what the West has, which is a more open society. Now, you can obviously say, well, we have censorship now. People get knocked off. They just cut off Alex Jones, the provocateur, the conspiracy theorist provocateur from every major social media platform. Whether you love that or hate that, wherever you fall on that, our system is not perfect in this sense, for that. And I don't support Alex Jones. I'd like to be clear on that. I think all the stuff with the Sandy Hook kids was absolutely horrific and beyond angering, just as a parent myself. But, we're looking at this and we're thinking, okay, even if we have these things, we have the ability to have an open forum, to debate, to level lawsuits, to change laws, to have a redress of grievances against our government, which is something that the Chinese-led internet is not going to have. And Google wants it both ways. They really do. And so they want to be able to be the search engine and platform of choice for the United States and the West, but they also want to be the censored platform of choice for China in the East. And that is, I think, a horrible position to be in, because it really just looks like they're after money, and they don't care how they get it or what oppressive tactics they need to use or implement for governments that will give oppressive tactics. So not a big fan of Google at the moment, but that is your Google news. And I promise you, I will probably be diving much, much deeper into that, because that affects censorship, privacy, authoritarianism, and all this other kind of stuff globally. And what we see in 10 years may not be what we know right now as what we consider the internet. So that is your Google/China/authoritarianism/censorship news of the day. In cyber warfare news, we're going to be talking about the U.S. government. Now, National Security Advisor John Bolton recently came out and basically said that the country is now going to have its, quote, first fully articulated cyber strategy in 15 years, and that it's now in effect. Basically, what he is doing, the strategy is a template that government agencies can use to wage offensive cyber warfare, not defensive, offensive cyber warfare, to assume, or rather to assure that their organizations are staying safe. Now, one of the problems that we have with this kind of information or going on the offensive is that it's like a trade tariff. Now, I am not an economist, so I am not going to speak to whether the trade tariffs that we are currently imposing are good or bad, but I will say this. If we are imposing a sanction or a tariff on one country, it is reasonable to assume that they are going to go ahead and retaliate and impose their own tariffs on that. That's exactly what happened with China, for example. We impose tariffs. China basically says, okay, well, we're going to do the same thing. That's how a trade war works. Now, if we are looking at actual warfare, it's the same thing. If I invade a country, I am fully assuming that country is going to shoot back. They're not just going to like open their gates and say, oh, come in and conquer us. Now, whether we're overwhelmingly good in terms of force to easily conquer or not is another story, but you expect resistance. And so if we are going to start waging active cyber warfare, we have to assume that the countries that we are waging the cyber warfare on are going to be retaliating against us. Now, here's why that's important. We know that for the last few years, organizations that have not really been made public or so, and so I couldn't tell you if groups like the NSA or CIA know, although they might know or they might have extremely logical guesses to this. We can assume that it is the Russians and the Chinese and all of that have been probing the infrastructure, technological infrastructure within the United States. So this is power stations and dams and all this kind of stuff, basically anything that's connected to the internet. We don't necessarily know what the level of the foothold is that they have here. And it's very possible that our intelligence agencies that actively monitor and look for this don't know either. And so if we're launching a cyber warfare attack against Russia, for example, and let's say Russia has access that we don't know about, let's say it's dormant remote access into a power plant, they might be able to just shut the power plant down or put it into meltdown or, you know, whatever else. And so we have to be very careful if we're doing this. I'm not sitting here advocating, say, we are pacifists. We are clearly under attack in some ways. And as the deep dive segment that you will hear, I'm going to dive into that a little bit. But we have to make sure that we are balancing our offensive capabilities with the political situation, diplomacy, all of these things. And so we're going to see what this happens. But if we are taking the gloves off right now, per the National Security Advisor Bolton of the Trump administration, then I would really hope that we are not going to, you know, dive head in without really giving this a lot of thought. And if we are allowing every government agency to kind of be its own island based on the same template, if there's nobody coordinating this, are we going to interfere with each other? Are we going to bump into government agencies? Is one agency going to attack and the other one is going to be on the receiving end of that because, you know, they're not? I don't know. So hopefully more information is going to come out on this. We just recently saw this, although, you know, as you know, the news has been dominated by other things such as Supreme Court nominations and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully this isn't going to get buried on like page 92. Hopefully we will continue to be on the forefront of this, and I will continue to talk about this so you guys are aware of what's going on. And that is your government cyber warfare news of the day. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in smart home news, I don't know if you have an Amazon Echo or a Google Home or an Apple, whatever it's called. I can never remember theirs. But we are going to have a new major player in this field, and that is Facebook. Now, Facebook is creating what they're calling Facebook Portal. It's going to be, and the rumor is, it's going to be based in part on Amazon Echo's AI, but it's going to be a Facebook-derived smart home device. Now, the goal of this smart home device is like many other smart homes, but it's smart home devices, but its focus is actually on video chat. Now, a lot of people don't realize that if you're on Facebook, and I know a lot of you are, I have a public page on Facebook that you guys can follow, see my daily videos, etc. Short plug there. You know that anything you put into Facebook actually ends up in their facial recognition database. They have one of the largest biometrics databases on the planet. And by virtue of that, your face is recognized. So those pictures from summer vacation, they know who you are. Now, what makes this interesting is that they are integrating the facial recognition capability of Facebook itself into the portal. And so what's going to happen, and it's kind of creepy, and I did a video on this and got a lot of oh hell no's, you know, from people. But they, what they're doing is they're actually putting in a camera that will follow you. So if you walk to one side of the room, the camera will tilt to follow you, but the camera knows who you are based on facial recognition. So when you walk into the room, the camera sees your face and says, oh, it's Nick. Oh, it's Bill. Oh, it's whoever. And then follows you around the room. So if you want to make a video call or do whatever with it, it's already trained on you. And I think that's a very interesting feature. Now, what's interesting on top of this is that they added a privacy shutter to the camera, so you can, you know, slide something over the camera to actually shut off that capability. But by all reports, that was an afterthought. And that was only an afterthought in development when all of the privacy issues with Facebook came into play. And so they added it, you know, as an afterthought, which is funny because you can see pictures with Mark Zuckerberg and his laptop, and he actually has put tape over the camera in his laptop to make sure that if it's hacked and penetrated, it can't be seen. I actually have slide covers on all of my video cameras as well. But I find this to be a very interesting interesting development from Facebook that while it's good for Zuckerberg, it was an afterthought for everybody else, if the reports are right. So would you put one of these things in your house? I think a lot of people wouldn't. And we're going to see how well this does in sales, just given that their reputation has gone way down in terms of confidence in consumers and confidence in privacy and all of that. So take it for what it's worth. But the Facebook portal will soon be launched. And in FEMA news, I'm going to give you a bit of an update here. So basically, in mid-September, President Trump was going to be texting all of us through FEMA's emergency wireless system. Basically, this is a way for a president of the United States to address the public, the national public, in the state of emergency, state of crisis, all of that, by FEMA system. So in other words, if let's say there's a major national disaster, the president now has the ability to send a text message that cannot be overridden, essentially, to every phone in the United States to give instructions, alerts, information, you know, whatever that is. FEMA was going to be testing this mid-September. However, they canceled that test, not really due to protest, but because Hurricane Florence was taking up so much of their time, and North Carolina, our heart obviously goes out to you guys and anybody else affected by that hurricane. I know that a lot of the state's underwater right now, especially on the coast. But FEMA basically had their hands busy focusing obviously on this, which is where they should be. So they postponed the test, until August 3rd. Now, if you're listening to this, odds are, the test is either, depending on the day you're listening to this, the test has already hit or the test has passed. You know, so some of you are listening to a recording of this broadcast as opposed to, you know, a live broadcast earlier in the week from before the October 3rd deadline. So if this doesn't pass and you're listening to this and the text didn't come out, you'll know why I'm talking about this and saying, wait a second, you know, it's postponed. Nick should know this. So FYI on that. But that is your FEMA news of the day. And so October 3rd, be prepared to get a text message from President Trump. And in government privacy news, I don't know if you guys are familiar, and this is not what this is about, but if you're not familiar with the GDPR or the data, the General Data Protection Regulation, this is the European Union earlier this year basically turning up consumer privacy to 11. You might have heard about this. Basically, citizens of the EU can go to organizations that hold a lot of data on them, like you know, like Facebook, and say, what do you have on me? What have you done with it? And they have the ability and right to delete and purge their records permanently from organizations. And so you might have gone to a lot of websites that are now prompting you saying, hey, we have a new cookie policy. Click here to edit your cookies or just accept this. That stems from the GDPR. Now, the United States doesn't have anything like this. What we have is a patchwork of federal, state, local, and self-regulatory compliances for consumer protection. So if it's credit cards, it's PCI DSS. If it's health records, it's HIPAA. If you are doing your stock trader, for example, on Wall Street, has to fall under SEC compliance. Your bank has FFIEC and GILBA, and on and on and on and on. And so we don't have a uniform system. California, the state of California, decided to try to do that. And basically passed a law that said by 2020, California is going to have its own GDPR. Now, a lot of states are looking at this because they are trying to turn up their consumer protection. And that has set Silicon Valley off into a tizzy. Obviously, Silicon Valley is not a huge fan of this. When we are looking at the Facebooks, Googles, Twitters, et cetera, of the world, they make their money through data mining their users. If it's free to you, you're the product, and then selling that to advertisers to sharpen and hone this. This is how they make their money. And so they're not a big fan. They've pretty much activated their lobbyists in Washington, D.C. And what they want to see is a ban. They want basically Congress to pass a ban on allowing states to create their own GDPR to basically invalidate what California did and then ensure no other states can, and then push for a federal blanket law that would cover all 50 states. Now, I'm typically not one for more regulations where they're not needed. And I've actually been into some rather interesting debates with this with other technical leaders, you know, that I've had conversations with. And a lot of them say, well, you know, we shouldn't have regulations. It should be free. It should be open. You know, if you're willing to use the Facebooks of the world, then you are taking responsibility for your own personal data. Now, I can completely understand that position. I don't want to see needless regulation that does nothing but, let's say, cost time, money, and aggravation, but has no real positive effect. One of the few exceptions to that, I would think, in my brain at least, is the GDPR. I think personally, and feel free to disagree with me, as I know some of you will, that we do need one. And here's why. Because enshrined in the Constitution of the United States is our ability for freedom of expression, but it's also our ability for privacy. We have a right to privacy. We have a right to protect ourselves, which means the organization and institutions that we're working with should also have should also allow us to work with them in the way that we see fit. And so basically, I think that if we are enabling a federal law that basically says we have the right to privacy at the technological level, it's an extension of the Constitution. It's not imposing anything that, one, already hasn't been imposed on these companies, because Facebook is not going to pull out of Europe. Google is not going to pull out of Europe. And so they already have the technology in place. They're just not applying it to us. It's already there. And so why not ensure that we have and continue to keep our right to privacy, that nobody is going to violate that against our knowledge? We, and especially on this radio show, I've mentioned multiple times of, you know, well, you can turn off, you can basically go into Google and say, oh, turn off all the tracking stuff, but all the other Google apps are tracking you. You know, Maps pinpoints you and is not going away. So even if you've said don't turn on location tracking, Google still tracks you. You know, Facebook has been caught doing similar things. Most of these big platforms have. And if we don't have any redress beyond that, we actually can't really move anywhere else. Not that I consider Facebook or Google a monopoly, but there's no huge alternatives. I can leave Facebook and go to DuckDuckGo, for example, which is a smaller search engine that doesn't track you. But they don't have an ecosystem like a Google does, because they don't have the billions of dollars. They don't have something that's easy to use. A lot of people don't think about this and say, oh, well, I have an Android phone, so I have Chrome and I have Google Search and I have Gmail and Google Voice and Google Maps and all of these products, and it makes my life easier because everything integrates and talks. There's no real competitor to that. I mean, even Apple, that is not exactly 100% best on privacy as well. They are good on privacy, but they do things like sell your face mapping data to third-party developers to improve security and other things. We're looking at a very few companies that, where if we leave their ecosystem, it's infinitely harder just to, keep up with the everyday everythings without a lot of work. And so that's the trade-off that we make. So in my mind, my thought is we really need to make sure that we have something like that, because then if I want to leave Facebook, I know they're not going to hold on to my data and use it because I used their service for years, or Google or whoever it is. I'm pointing fingers at everybody and nobody at the same time with this, but I really do think we need this. So just keep that for what it's worth. But we're going to see what happens with California. We're going to see what happens with the lobbyists of Silicon Valley forcing Congress to invalidate California's law. Or we're going to see what happens with creating a national GDPR law of ourselves. So we'll see where that goes. But that is your privacy news of the day. And in IoT news, and this should be no surprise to anybody, we are actually seeing a vast rise in IoT hacking and proliferation. Now, we know in 2016, one of the most damaging viruses ever to come out that leveled some of the largest bandwidth attacks against the basically the world came from infected IoT devices with an infection known as Mirai. Now, some of the numbers are in from Kaspersky, and if you're not familiar with Kaspersky, they make antivirus. They also do cybersecurity research. They set up what is called a honeypot system to try to see hacking attempts and all of this. Now, basically, if you're not familiar with what a honeypot is basically it's a weakened system that looks very easy to hackers in order for them to break in and maliciously manipulate the item. So a hacker can break in, and then Kaspersky can see, oh, okay, they broke in. Now what are they doing? How are they looking at this? And if we're looking at the numbers between 2016 and 2018, it is absolutely nuts. So when they first started deploying their honeypots for the full year of 2016, Kaspersky tracked 3,219 hijacking or invasion attempts on their IoT devices, their fake IoT devices. Hackers hit them over 3,200 times. Now, fast forward to last year, 2017, and for the year, we went from 3,200 to 32,614. So that is like a 10 times increase between 2016 and 2017. And do you want to guess what 2018 is? I mean, like, really guess what this is? If we're looking at this, in 2017, we had 32,614 hacks on the IoT devices Kaspersky put out. In 2018, we've got 121,588 as of late September, mid to late September. Mind you, we're not done. Like, we are not done with 2018, and we have a four-time increase over and over. So within 9 months or so, we have over 121,000 hijacking attempts, and that's on a single Kaspersky research project that has nothing to do with the rest of the IoT world out there. Now, by 2020, it's estimated that we're going to have 24 billion IoT devices online worldwide, and at any given time of those roughly 10% are going to be infected. 10%, which means we're going to have 2.4 billion infected and weaponized IoT devices worldwide. It is that insane out there, and it continues to increase, and these continue to be good targets. So if you are buying IoT devices, make sure you've got them behind good firewalls. Make sure you're changing default passwords. Make sure you're isolating them from your regular network if you can. I mean, these are things that we have to do to keep these things safe. And on the IoT development side, the IoT developers really have to start baking security into their products in a way that they've never done that before. It is so, so important. So that is your IoT news of the day. And unfortunately, given these trends, it's only going to get worse. So please, please, please protect your IoT devices. And in identity news, we're going to be talking about Project Verify. Now, if you're not familiar with Project Verify, this is a joint effort or collaboration between the four major cell carriers in the United States. That's Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cellular. Now, when we're looking at this, we are looking at a way that the carriers are going to use, one, your identity, such as your username and password, and then pair it with the telemetry and biometrics of your mobile device to ensure that you stay safe. So instead of having two-factor authentication, which is something I've talked about before on air, basically what we are going to see is a two-factor authentication app go away and the phone itself be that. So for example, some of the things that are going to take into account is the phone has basically what's called a SIM card in it that has cryptographic information in it that is unique to the phone. So when you're logging in, Project Verify is going to verify the location of the phone, the cryptographic information that's unique to the phone through the SIM card, possible other forms of telemetry like your fingerprint or tilt or any one of these things. So if, for example, somebody spoofs your SIM card or clones your SIM card and is on the other side of the world trying to log in as you, Verizon is not going to accept that because it is typically out of bounds for you and the cryptographic information of the SIM card may not match. They're also going to look at account longevity as well. So, you know, if you've been a Verizon or a T-Mobile or whatever customer, you know, for 10 years and suddenly right out of the blue, you have a brand new phone and you're trying to log in somewhere, that might be a problem for them, which is going to be kind of interesting to see how they sort that out because, you know, people upgrade phones, you know, sometimes once a year, sometimes faster, sometimes twice, you know, once every 2 years, whatever that is. And so they're probably going to look at that pattern. But if you're, you know, flipping phones every month, they're probably going to see that as suspect. That's my guess. You're listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show. We'll be back right after this quick message.